The people in Las Vegas have you guys as underdogs Sunday on.
So who are the people, Ben?
Yes, the odds makers.
There you go. That's what they are. They're called odds makers, not odds people. It's a lot of people in Las Vegas. Like they only, it's only a few of them that they trust to set the line.
So do you pay attention to that? I mean, do you notice that?
No. I mean, again, it gets brought to attention. I don't think that, you know, I mean, it's every week you see, you know, in this league that records really don't mean anything. And, you know, the point spreads and survivor pools get blown up every week and all that other stuff. So we're just trying to focus on our preparation here and get back into it. You know, had a good day Monday. Excited about the meetings thus far today. And then, you know.
Hour 2, Jones and Keith here on WEEI. That was Mike Vrabel yesterday. Appreciate him calling out the survivor pools. I did last 14 weeks in the survivor, Brad.
Yeah, I did feel like that was a personal shot right
at you. It
was.
He's like, he knows. He's like, listen.
I heard Keith just got blown up in the survivor pool.
Really tough to get picked.
Did you say 13? You made it 13 weeks?
So
you lost in week 14?
I had a pick in week 14. So I guess technically I went 13-1.
I'd say he survived until week 14.
Yeah, that was
not the end of it.
18 weeks is tough, right?
I'll give the semantics just make us feel better.
Yeah. That's a tough mountain to climb, the 18 weeks. But God willing, I'll be back next year to try to repeat as survivor champion.
I did like him calling out Volin a little bit, too.
Who are the people, Ben?
I guess the odds maker.
There you go.
Who are the people? There you go, you stupid idiot.
People.
People are saying you... You know, they picked you as the underdog?
Do you think the odds maker.
There you go.
There you go.
Yay,
hey, good for you.
How about
you get it, Ben?
The big brain on Ben. So the Pats remain underdogs. I guess this bounced around elsewhere. We were reading you
movement.
We were reading you the FanDuel odds yesterday. Those have not moved. I mean, maybe some of the juice has, but they're still point and a half underdogs, and they're plus 100 on the money line against Buffalo. I guess that bounced around elsewhere yesterday. But they remain underdogs. I think they're underdogs on DraftKings today as well. That's the one that's kind of ping-ponged around a little bit. Do you expect Vrabel to use it? Do you expect Vrabel to lean on that to motivate or, you know, rile these guys up down the stretch? You shouldn't need a lot of motivation when it's the Bills on the other side and the number one seed is, you know, within their reach. Do you think it's something he leans on and harps on and we hear a lot about after the fact?
I don't think it's going to be one of those where, like, Tom Brady, after they beat the Chiefs in the AFC title game, is like, oh, everybody said we sucked. Like, I don't think it's going to be one of those. Because just because they're one-point underdogs to the team that's won five straight divisions and the reigning MVP, I don't know if it's like an injustice.
Well,
I'm a little surprised by the number. I think it's good. No, the obvious motivation is you win the game, you win the division. It's not like, hey, odds makers think that we're supposed to lose by a point. I don't think they'll use that. I wouldn't be surprised if it's like lumped in with everything else. Like as you're hyping up the team, like, and by the way, like, you know, we're underdogs at our own place. That might be factored in, but no. This is Josh Allen coming to town. That's the motivation. I think Steph Diggs doesn't need to be told that they're one-point underdogs to be fired up to play the Bills again.
No, you'll hear from him in a moment.
Oh, 100%.
You surprised Vrabel was willing to engage on that at all, given
the oddsmaker thing? Or like,
yeah, just given some of
the
accusations, I'd say specifically from El Prez at Pete Carroll about what he was doing at the end of the game last week and just gambling, you know, issues that all these professional sports leagues have had.
Yeah, it's kind of the Wild West out
there. Don't you just kind of like, wouldn't it be smarter? And I respect Vrabel for answering all this stuff, but I'm just saying, wouldn't it be smarter to just tap out and be like, yeah, you know, the odds are the odds, whatever. We don't pay attention to that. He kind of is like, yeah, I don't know. I'm aware of all of it, to be honest, which is truthful and I believe.
No, I like it.
I just don't know that a lot of coaches maybe should be dabbling in that these days.
Yeah, maybe. Well, that's the thing is like it's obviously not as it changing all the time, but it's just more right in front. I mean, every commercial break, there's an ad for it. Like, it's just so right up in your face. All these different parts of the stadium are brought to you by that. So it'd be too naive to be like, I don't know what any of that is. Like, yeah, you do. And so I thought it was fine. I thought it was a harmless answer.
Well, Steph Diggs kind of tried to play that. No, I think it was harmless, too.
Yeah.
I just wonder if, you know, that from a PR standpoint.
Oh, just like avoid it?
Yeah. I might tap out on those level of questions in the future, Vrabel, but you don't need my media advice. Steph Diggs did pretend not to know. He was asked about this. We kind of sandwiched a few different answers. The reporters circled back later on. But here's an exchange on the Pats being underdogs against Buffalo.
Steph, you guys are actually underdogs. Is this something you're aware of?
I didn't know that. That's the first time I heard of it.
good.
Steph, you guys have already exceeded a lot of people's expectations in terms of number of wins you have. You just heard you guys are underdogs this week. Have you felt like, or have you sensed at all, that this team plays with sort of a, like, age, nobody believed in us mentality or chip?
A real edge. I think that's why I said it was good. This team is full of teams that was, like, you know, cast offs and people who were cut or people who didn't necessarily get the opportunity that they wanted, whatever, however you dice it up. And I feel like that's good for us, you know. Being an underdog, you know, people like us been an underdog our whole life. We're going to have something to prove regardless of it. But I think the main thing is it gets exciting when you got a lot to prove. When you're playing with that edge and you're playing aggressive because nobody believed in us but us. You know, the record is surprising to everybody, and all we did is take it one game at a time, and I think we're going to do the same thing with this one.
Okay. I mean, he wants to be the underdog. You said good.
It's good.
I've been an underdog my whole life. Most of us have been. We're cast-offs. We're this and that. We play with an edge. And so I do expect the Patriots to play that way maybe anyway.
Yeah.
But now that this is a larger narrative going into the game, we spent a lot of time talking about it yesterday. I didn't realize all the players and Vrabel were going to get asked about it in the middle of the show. But I do think that I expect them to play that way in this game. Coming off the bye against this team with the division at stake, they should.
I think once again, too, you have an example of a player and like a high-end veteran player echoing what the coaches said. So it stood out to me like weeks ago where on one of the game broadcasts, I think it was like Tony Romo was talking about all the players they have on their team that got cut. And he had like the specific number and you're like, okay, that was
right.
And then Vrabel said the same thing, I think with Greg. It might have been another interview, but I think it was with Greg. He mentioned that. And now you have Steph Diggs saying that too. And it's funny because even the coach himself, Mike Vrabel, fired by the Tennessee Titans. A bunch of players on both sides of the ball were cut by their team. Steph Diggs, as great of a player as he has been in the league, first team all pro, leading the league and this, that, and the other thing, he was available for every single team. And the Patriots were really the only one that offered him a deal.
Pretty much one team wanted him.
That's right. And so he's playing, even a guy like that who's had success in the league is motivated by that. A bunch of other guys are just trying to stay in the league or prove that they're better than people thought that they were. So that's that can be pretty good, right? When you also need talent, but like when you put all that together, that's sort of where they're at. So I feel like it is a team that's been able to stay pretty motivated throughout this season, even though they're on a 10-game winning streak and people are starting to tell them like how good they are.
Yeah. I mean, look, I want them to play with that edge. They have all year. And they should treat this like they're underdogs, even though they've won 10 in a row and they are hosting the game and they are in the driver's seat for the number one seed in the AFC and they can wrap up the division and all these other things. They're technically the underdogs in this game, which means somewhere out there, and I agree, it's not the most egregious, Keith. It's not like they're two touchdown underdogs or something like that. Same Phil Rivers against the Seattle Seahawks
good
this week.
Good Lord, how's that going to go?
That's the definition of somebody that no one believes in.
Nobody.
Rightfully so.
Really deep down, can't believe
it. I can't imagine he does. Like, that's somebody who you really not believed in. This is basically a coin flip. You're plus 100 on the money.
Yeah.
So, like, it's not crazy, but I expected him to be favored in the game. I'm a little surprised they're not favored in the game.
Mm-hmm.
So, there's a lot of people out there that don't believe in him. Go out there and prove it. And if you need that added motivation, you probably shouldn't. But if you do, to wrap up the division and hopefully cruise down the stretch, then I think that's a good thing. You think Diggs is going to have another monster game? I don't know if it's going to be 10 for 146. Yeah. You expect another game like that?
Yeah, I do. Oh, my God. He still has never looked faster than he did against the Bills this year.
How does he replicate that?
I don't know if
he looked different right from the first snap in that game.
So it might not be the same. It might not look the same.
That was at Buffalo. That was prime time.
Right.
This is home.
No, Sunday night football in Buffalo, I think, was going to be the best version of Diggs this year, and it was. So Sunday at 1 at home. But he'll be fired. He's fired up before every game. You see him getting the teammates. But then as soon as he sees the Bills uniform on the other side, I think he'll have something in the tank. I think this will be his best game of like the second half of the season. I think he'll be great.
You want his yardage total since the Bills game?
Sure.
28, 69.
Nice.
14, 38, 46 with a touchdown against Tampa.
Mm-hmm.
105 against the Jets, good.
Mm-hmm.
20 and 26 the last 2 weeks.
And 105 also is a primetime game.
Correct.
Although the Giants game was a primetime game too. So it's not just a primetime thing. Even in there, like, it hasn't been a ton of targets, ton of yards. It has been some fourth downs. It has been some, you know, key first down catches, things like that. Drake May, over this span too, has been spreading the ball around. Hunter Henry's the leading receiver a couple of times. Mac Hollins is. Kyle Williams has factored in with a couple of long touchdowns. So they've spread the ball around. We talked about he still needs like 74 yards a game the rest of the way to get to 1,000. Might be tough. I think if he goes over 74 on Sunday, I think it's in play. If he doesn't, then it's probably not happening. Still will be a good year. Still be like 900-something yards, 800, 900-something yards.
That's true.
But it's in reach.
He does need that finishing kick.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that's important to him to be a 1,000-yard receiver if he can go get that done.
No, I think he'll be a pretty big part of the game.
Okay, 617-779-7937. You can jump in on this. We'll get to Josh Allen and limiting him in the game on Sunday as well. Coming up, plus Sal Capaccio later on this hour. We'll get the Buffalo view on what is a big game on Sunday between the Pats and the Bills. Plus, we go on the clock at high noon. We give you our Red Sox plans for this offseason. Dan in Brockton is waiting patiently on the Red Sox. Go ahead, Dan.
Rich, don't feel so bad about that elimination poll.
Thank you.
The national guy, he's on from 2 to 6.
Yeah.
$90,000. You got the 14 weeks, too. He had Tampa Bay.
Oof.
Man.
Tough.
Yeah.
Tough.
I guess it was 3,000 people in the pool, so what's it, $30 to make 90 G's?
Got it.
Not too bad.
Jibbing. All right. Christmas.
Good elimination. Yeah. Survivor pool talk.
No, I didn't lose 90 grand.
You had a Craig Breslow take?
Go ahead, yeah.
So anyways, what I wanted to talk about was a clown from D.C. He should be calling Howie Carr. What's he writes speeches for Biden or something?
I don't know. I don't speak to that. I don't know what he does for a day job.
Roasted.
Yeah.
Anyways, you guys are the best thing since Lewis and Martin, so keep up the good work.
Lewis and Martin.
Is it a compliment? Our favorite game we like
to
play. Is
I know it a compliment? Lewis and Clark. Should I know Lewis and Martin?
Yeah.
I should?
I think so.
I hear you frantically Googling over there. I know Lewis
I
and
think
Clark.
It's Martin and Lewis.
Greatest thing
was
since...
Was a comedy duo in the 40s.
Oh.
Yeah.
How about that?
Bob Ryan's favorite comedy duo.
Yeah. Right. Okay. Hey, look, we'll take that. That's
Lewis
a nice Dan compliment.
Squarely in demo, you think?
Lewis and Martin.
Is it a compliment? I was thinking...
What was his problem with
Justin
in D.C.?
The subject line said he had an issue with Breslow, but apparently it was
Biden
with Justin.
Zinger in there.
Justin in D.C., yeah. Hang on. A lot of people were giving feedback here on Justin.
Yeah, people weren't happy with that.
Why do you guys give him so much airtime? Does he work? Guys, take
I don't know. I can't speak to what everybody else does.
Guys, take his man card. I like Justin. I'm
taking anybody's man card. There are no such thing.
It doesn't exist.
No, Mingles tried to take mine yesterday. Yeah, Mingles was ready. He looked at my wallet. He was ready to take it away. I'm like, I never had one, sense. Mingles. What do you want? The whole idea of Justin calling in and beating us up over there, I'm fine with that. I like Justin in D.C. We disagree on Breslow.
It was Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis.
Oh, that's who it was?
Yeah.
That's Martin and Lewis?
I believe so, yeah.
Wow, that is a compliment.
I think it is, yeah.
How about that? But I just think the whole idea of, oh, the Orioles are going to do all this, and I guess I'm contingent on Breslow coming, Bregman coming back too. That one feels, and maybe with the Red Sox is a dangerous assumption, he was on the team last year.
He was on the team. They didn't sign him once.
I don't think that's like a crazy thing to like have as a caveat. The Orioles making all these trades for players who may or may not move feels a little more wild, but whatever. If Bregman's back, they absolutely should be a playoff team. That's not an excuse for Breslow or Henry or anybody else. I'm just telling you, they can't miss the playoffs and everybody go, well, what do you want? They don't have any talent. They have enough talent to make the playoffs in the AL if Bregman's back.
I think it's a possibility.
That's no glitter guns, no parade for that.
Yeah.
The expectation, though, is they're a playoff team. The expectation should be they missed the playoffs. I don't think.
No, but let's see what the other teams do, right? So, like, you already saw one guy that I really wanted on the Red Sox, you really wanted on the Red Sox, go to the Orioles. So a team that was not a playoff team added Pete Alonso.
I just remembered, me and Hart have a bet riding on this. For
which
a 12-pack on the Orioles making the playoffs
okay.
over the Red Sox.
But so
better record than the Red Sox.
But there are a pile of free agents, right? Like Bregman could return, or he could go to another American League team.
Yep.
Or like all these guys, all these pitchers that we're trying to link to the Red Sox, some might stay on their teams, some might go to other AL teams, right? Like there's still so much to be had. Really the big name, like Josh Naylor stayed with Seattle, Kyle Schwarber stayed with Philly. But Pete Alonso, Edwin Diaz, these are some of the bigger names that have moved so far. So, like, there's still a chance for – Toronto got Dylan Cease. Now, I know they were a playoff team, but, like, they went out, spent real money, and improved their rotation.
And that's a real one because I think they needed to upgrade their rotation.
Yeah.
I think they were – I mean, they can they can smash the ball, as we saw, although they might lose Bichette. So get ready for that, too. 617-779-7937. Ryan's in New Jersey. Hello, Ryan.
Hey, guys.
Hello, Ryan?
Yeah.
Ryan, oh, sorry. You, no, well, yeah, I don't know if you're
kinda.
Under
go ahead.
A power line.
Okay. All right. I'll try again. Yep. So apparently Scott Boras is calling the Mariners, begging for them to sign Bregman, according to Twitter, you know, which you could take out with a grain of salt. But what I was thinking about Bregman, and he has no incentive to re-sign with Boston, with one caveat, because you know, John Henry is leading the charge to bust down the players' union, limit contract lengths, you know, try to drive the AAVs down. Scott Boras, that's his lifeline. So why would Bregman want to sign with Boston? They're literally out against the two of them.
Let's see. If they have the best offer, he's going to sign there. I mean, they're going to need...
Yeah, he chose less years last time for more money per year.
You don't think Henry was trying to break down the big contracts in baseball last year? They signed
him. He's ready for a salary cap.
So he needs an alternative. Yeah. And look, he could sign somewhere else, and maybe I'm missing it, but I don't think he's going to Detroit. It doesn't sound like Detroit is in on him really at all. All the reports are that the interest is lukewarm compared to a year ago. I don't think he's going to Philly. I guess he could. You know, so where's he going to go?
Do you think Bregman this year would value another short-term high AAV deal?
I don't.
I don't think so either. I don't think he wants to go over that again. And he had, like, a good year, but he missed so much time that it's hard to say, like, massive contract year, payday. I was so naive. Like, I thought there was a chance he might just opt in and make $41 million next year and then play it again the year that he is. But knowing that he had an opt-out after year two and he still opted out after year one makes me feel like, no, this might be the time where, like, a five-year deal gets it done.
Yeah, and I don't know. I just think the whole idea of him opting out, he'd only opt out to not come back, that's also not true. You know, I mean, Gerrit Cole has opted out, and CeCe Sabathia opted out of their deals, and they came back. So, I mean, I don't necessarily think that's true. I think it's far more likely when a guy opts out, they're probably leaving because they don't see eye to eye. But I can think of examples where guys go back and use it as a way to use their leverage to get paid more by that team. I don't know what the destination is for Breslow. If Boras really is calling up, I haven't seen this, so let's take the caller at his word.
Yep.
If Boras really is calling other teams frantically trying to get them involved, that's a bad sign for Breslow's market. Bregman's market.
No, 100%.
I think that's a bad sign for his market. And
I know he doesn't have the qualifying offer attached to him, but I don't think that the season that he had last year is going to make the interest significantly higher.
I don't either. But then again, I didn't necessarily think Alonso was going to get the fifth year, and he did. So.
No, and it's a weak third base market, so I guess that also helps Bregman. It's not like he's competing with a lot of other guys over there.
617-779-7937. Sal Capaccio from WGR up in Buffalo going to join us later on this hour at 11:45 for the Buffalo View on the Game. Less than an hour from now at high noon, we go on the clock. We give you a new plan for the Red Sox. We did last Thursday.
Yeah.
It's already been blown to smithereens.
Yeah, it's gone.
So new plan coming your way at high noon. We'll also get you a Kiefer Madness at 12:45. Stay tuned for that. Nick has all the latest in trending. And when we come back, how do the Patriots slow down? I don't think they're going to stop Josh Allen. We'll get to it next.
Are you at the point in your career when you face a Josh Allen or an Aaron Rodgers, you look at it and say, that's a contemporary of mine, or you still sort of look at it, oh, that's a guy I watched growing up and tried to learn from when I was developing as a quarterback?
No, I think it's a little bit of both. I think you're playing him as a competitor. You know, you're playing against, you know, these guys that are the best quarterbacks in the league. You want to compete with them. You want to beat them, and you want to, you know, kind of match their level. But at the same time, you want to, you know, take things from them and realize, you know, appreciate what they're doing for the game, what they've done for their careers and the players they are. And Josh is one of them. He's, you know, fun to watch, and he's one of the best, you know, if not the best in the game right now. So he's playing at a really high level, and it's always fun to watch. And he's been good to me, and I appreciate what he's, the relationship he's built with me.
That was Drake May yesterday discussing his contemporaries, Aaron Rodgers and Josh Allen.
That's right.
I shudder to think what the Red Sox would think of Aaron Rodgers and Phillip Rivers and guys like that still playing.
Oh, God, no, in a casket.
If Pete Alonso is too old for them. But that was an interesting question by Gasper. He's like, are those guys your contemporaries? Like, how do you view them? Are you still in awe of them, et cetera? And you still get a little bit of that from Drake. Remember when he first got into the league?
Oh, he got like a jersey swap with Aaron Rodgers.
He's
or whatever,
like begging for a jersey from Aaron Rodgers on Thursday Night Football. And
I bet that's always like.
Who were some of the other ones that he was doing that with? There were others. I don't think it was Allen, but maybe it was.
I'm not sure.
The Rodgers one, I definitely remember.
Rodgers for sure. Mitch Trubisky maybe. No,
probably would have been Cam Newton.
Yeah, it would have been Cam Newton. But like, that's got to be something that. at first is always you're kind of like in awe of. You know, people still make fun of Sean McVay from in the Super Bowl. Like, he couldn't believe Bill Belichick was on the other side. But then that wears off, right? Like, you're like, okay, I do belong here. But I don't blame those guys for, at the first time, it being, like, a little jarring. Like, if you grew up always watching, like, Tom Brady's the extreme, even Aaron Rodgers. But even, like, Josh Allen, the last several years, like, you were in high school and in college, and when you'd watch the NFL, not only that, not only was this guy really good, but people were comparing you to him.
Yep.
So, like, that's something. And then you see him on the field for the first time. But then earlier this year, you beat him head-to-head. You're fighting for the division. Your team has a better record than him. You're closer to the MVP this season than he is this season. So, like, I'm sure he has all the respect in the world for him, but it's also, all right, he is a peer now. He's a quarterback I'm going to have to go through two, maybe even three times a year going forward.
It is funny when you look at the first game between these two teams. We were asking the question, you know, how do you limit Josh Allen? Which I think they did in the first matchup. They limited him.
Yeah.
Buffalo scored 20 points. Allen did not play horribly. 22 out of 31, 253, two touchdowns and a pick. He also had a fumble.
Right.
He ran for 53 yards in the game. His quarterback rating was 103. Honestly, I'd kind of consider that limiting him.
Yeah. Where two touchdowns? He had six like 2 weeks after that. True. So, yeah, two is not bad.
And situationally, if you can get a couple of turnovers or like a big stop here, force him to a field goal there. And they had other fumbles on top of it in that game as well.
He also had like...
The botched exchange, is that the one he got charged with, or was there a separate fumble with that? I'm trying to remember.
No, he got charged with that one.
That was his fumble? Okay. Yeah. So they had a bunch of turnovers in that game. Can you do that again? And then you look at Drake May, who in my head, I'm like, played awesome in that game, and I think he did.
Yeah.
But if you just looked at the statistical line, 22 out of 30, 273, no touchdowns, no picks. He ran for 12 yards.
Yeah.
Like, I remember it being way better than that, but...
But when they needed it, it was there. That was the game, like, you know, Ramondre scored some touchdowns.
Situationally, yeah. For him, again, yeah. It's like, when you got to have it, he is rolling to his right, falling out of bounds, hucking it 40 yards down the field to Steph Diggs. When you got to have it,
yeah.
He is stiff-arming a defender into the ground and converting a first down to Steph Diggs. So, yeah, I think you can throw out some of the numbers there. But the quarterback battle actually is probably a little more level than I remember from the first match.
Yeah, probably. And it's, you know, the stats obviously tell one story. But then, you know, for example, if they limit Josh Allen to, let's call it 53 yards rushing again, it all looks a little bit different. Is there a 3rd-and-15 run like he had against the Bengals where he picks up first down and he still ends with 53 yards, but he has like a soul-crushing first down pickup? That's different. Right, he can run for 60 yards if it's a lot of times, like, hey, it's 3rd-and-20, he picks up 15 on the ground, whatever, he'd still have to punt. Like,
or fourth and five where he hurdles a defender. We've seen him do that a million times.
Like, all right, like that kind of thing. Like, he can really crush you with some of that. And I wonder if that's something they do even a little bit more. Like, they put so much on Josh Allen because he's really all they have. And James Cook's good, but like
they limited Cook in fairness. So,
well, this was part of their thing where they had that streak going where they weren't allowing a 50-yard rusher for the longest time.
Yeah, he was 49.
He's close.
Right.
But that's why the number's 50. And so, I mean, I would expect him to be a little bit better. But with Josh Allen, we saw Justin Fields have a pretty good day running with the Jets. Like, I wonder if that's something they feel like they need to do a little bit more, because the Bills' receivers are bad, and the Patriots' secondary is good. So, like, that should be a matchup that the Patriots dominate.
Mike Vrabel was asked about this yesterday. How do you limit Josh Allen in the matchup? Here's what he had to say about that.
Well, you just have to, I don't think you can sit in any one thing. And certainly there's situations where you have to play man in this league. And you have to be on body. But then again, there's other things that then have to account when you have an athletic quarterback. You know, how are you going to account for the extra gap or the ability to scramble, to extend plays and all those different things? So I don't think that there's one particular coverage or defense or blitz that you can sit there and be in the entire game. I think it's about picking the opportunities. And then, you know, when you get an opportunity to make a play on them, you got to do everything that you can to, you know, to get him on the ground and not jump when he pump fakes or fall down when he stiff arms you or anything else.
So, look, I think
a tough guy to go against.
That's probably the right answer. Yeah. Some of that stuff is easier said than done.
Yeah.
When he stiff arms, you don't go to the ground. Okay, I mean, he's a monster of a man.
Good luck.
Okay, don't fall for the pump fakes. Like, he is like Mahomes, where sometimes they're pump faking like 10 yards downfield, and you're morons if you go for that.
Well, he's also bigger than everybody on the Patriots defense, with the exception of, like, Barmore. Yeah. Like, everybody else, like, height size, you're like, I don't know if Christian Ellis is going to be able to have the same type of, like, you know, he destroyed Gunnar Olszewski, destroyed Jackson Dart. I don't know if he can do that with Josh Allen.
No, he'll bounce off him like a bug off a windshield. So I agree. The Twitch chat's like, I don't know, get Christian Ellis on Josh Allen. I'm like, look, friend of the show.
Careful what you wish for.
I love that he knocked Jackson Dart in the next week and New York is still crying about it. Like, I love all that.
That was awesome.
But, like, you think he's going to do that to Josh Allen? Like, what are you talking about?
I don't know.
So the spinning the wheel on defense, I agree with. Like, throw him different looks. I think that is part of the answer. Don't give him anything he can predict and kind of understand what's happening pre-snap. That's probably your best bet. Pat scored 23 against Buffalo way back in week 5. What do they have to score this week?
I think that's
the over-under is high.
The over-under is high. I don't think it's much more than that. I think 27, 24. I think 23 could get it done again. I still look at the Bills' offense. I'm not that overwhelmed. Like, I think Josh Allen, maybe like maybe it's a similar blueprint to last game where he has a couple of touchdowns, or, you know, maybe he throws one, James Cook runs in one. I don't think they're going to score a million points. I think if the Pats score over 21, I bet they win.
Okay, since the bye week, Buffalo scored 40, 28, 13 at Miami,
mm-hmm.
44, 19 against Houston. 26-39.
Yeah.
Like, I think you probably got to be in at least the high 20s, but the good news is their defense stops no one.
No, they don't stop anybody. And some of those really high scoring games, like Cincinnati is a mess, and that also was some defensive points too. Right? That wasn't the offense didn't score 39.
Correct. Good point.
Game, but,
good point. Yeah.
But I do feel like the Patriots defense is better outside of Houston than the other 5-6 games that they've played recently. So yeah, you said over under 50.5, and if it's like a 1-point spread, I mean, they're basically telling you it's going to be 25-24 or something along those lines. So I think a game in the 20s, the Pats can win that.
I think you get to the high 20s, I'd feel pretty good about that. You know, if you're trying to win scoring 20 and kicking a late field goal again, I don't know if I like your chances
in that
game.
Their receivers are so bad.
They're terrible.
It's like, it's some of the schlep that Tom Brady had at the end, like when, especially when Edelman was hurt and he didn't have anybody else. Or,
what do you mean? They got Brandon Cooks.
Yep. Yeah, literally some of the same guys.
Did Brandon Cooks get a target last week? No.
I don't know. No. He has one total target so far. Their leading receiver is Khalil Shakir with 585 yards, 4 touchdowns.
Yeah, I like Shakir, but that's not going to get
it done. Come on.
I mean, their box score against the Bengals was crazy. Dawson Knox, 6-for-93. Dalton Kincaid, 4-for-21. James Cook, 2-for-31. Their leading wide receiver was Gabe Davis, 2-for-21.
Gabe Davis.
I mean, that's 1 week, but like, and the Bengals can't stop tight end.
And like, Keon Coleman, like, doesn't even play, doesn't even show up. No. So it's like, we were on this at the beginning of the season when don't get me wrong, I still thought the Bills were going to win the division, not the Patriots. But one spot that we were like, wow, that happened quickly.
They stink.
Patriots receivers way better than the Bills receivers. We were going into this year being like, the Pats receivers aren't even all that great. They've overachieved, but the Bills, we knew it. The GM was calling out guys on sports radio for
it. He's like taking a victory lab, like, oh, you guys don't like Josh Allen either. How'd that work out for you?
At least with Tom Brady and Patrick Mahomes, their team stopped giving them receivers after they won multiple Super Bowls. Yeah. Josh Allen's never been to a Super Bowl, and they're like, you're good. You don't need any receivers.
Allen hasn't proven that he can win without those guys. He hasn't been able to win with them.
No.
When he's had digs.
It's bizarre.
So, no, it's a good point. I mean, Brady and Mahomes, they took away receivers after those guys had already won.
But they still had Gronk and Kelsey. Like, they didn't go completely. He doesn't have a Gronk or a Kelsey.
No.
Or anywhere close.
Maybe you just answered it. Do you think Buffalo can win it all?
This year?
Yeah.
No. Part of it's the uniform. There's a little bit of just, I don't think the Buffalo Bills are going to win a Super Bowl. But, no. Like, this year, it seems like it's more open up to them. Because of, you know, Mahomes and Burrow and Jackson. But the Patriots, Broncos, and Texans look like pretty legit contenders right now. Plus whoever comes out of the NFC.
And they've already lost to, at least two of those teams?
Yes.
So, look, if they're not going to do it this year, I don't think they're ever going to do it.
I don't think so.
And I'm with you. I don't think they're going to do it this year. But let's get the view from Buffalo, shall we?
Yes.
On this matchup, on Steph Diggs. Are we in the honeymoon period with Steph Diggs? I want the Buffalo perspective on that. And again, can Buffalo get it done this year? Sal Capaccio, WGR 550 up in Buffalo, joins us next.
League. What commonalities have you seen in the rivalries you've participated in? Do you see any of those elements possibly here with Buffalo?
I just got here. So, I mean, again, I know that they've won the division 5 years in a row. I don't think there's really much of a rivalry for those years. Maybe not. I don't know. I wasn't paying any attention to it. I'm just focused on a very good football team that,
you know,
is used to winning, and they're determined and they're resilient, and, you know, we'll have to be at our best.
Mike Vrabel yesterday, Bills rivalry, not really much of a rivalry of late. And oh, by the way, I just got here. Pats won the first matchup back in week 5, 23-20 over Buffalo. They're 11-2. We've been talking about the game all week long. We felt it'd be good to get the Buffalo view from Sal Capaccio, WGR 550 up in Buffalo. Sal, thanks for joining us here on Jones and Keefe.
Yeah, you got it, guys. Anytime. Should be fun on Sunday.
It should be. Mm-hmm. We have spent the last couple of days trying to rationalize, and I'd like your thoughts on this, how the Patriots could go into Buffalo, beat the Bills in the midst of a 10-game win streak, coming off a bye week. Buffalo, and I don't know if you agree with this or not, but they've looked pretty shaky this year compared to how they've looked in the past. How, with all of those factors, is Buffalo favored as of right now in this game this weekend?
Well, I don't know. You have to ask the oddsmakers in Vegas. My guess is because they have Josh Allen and the experience of, you know, this type of football and this type of environment. You know, they have a very, very good December record under Sean McDermott. They are still one of the top scoring teams in the NFL. Their defense has been a bit shaky. So I guess that's why. I mean, there's, you know, you look at the Patriots and give them all the credit in the world. They're playing really consistent football all year. But I think there's probably some questions, I guess. It's not me saying it. I'm saying why you would be have the Bills favored. Still questions about their schedule or playing tight games and all that kind of thing. So I think it's a pretty even game. It doesn't surprise me either way that either team would be favored by a point or a point and a half.
What are the Bills fans' thoughts when they see Steph Diggs having the type of season he's having here in New England?
Well, I think, first of all, they're a little surprised, because this is a guy that was, it appeared more on the downside of his career when he left Buffalo. And then he went to Houston and he had the awful ACL injury. For him to come back and have this, you know, resurgence is unbelievable. It really just speaks volumes about his hard work and his talent, to be honest with you. I don't think there's not one Bills fan would say, oh my God, I can't believe they traded Stephon Diggs. I mean, it clearly was the end for the partnership at the end. He had to be traded for him and the Bills and for Josh Allen, I think. And all the talk that offseason was, well, what's Josh Allen going to do without a number one? Well, he went out and won the MVP. So I don't think anybody was upset about that. It's so funny. You get more Bills fans upset that Mac Hollins is on the Patriots than that Stephon Diggs these days, to be quite honest with you. So I think it's more of a kind of, you know, just a bit of a knife in the side that Stephon Diggs came to Buffalo and had the game he had in week 5.
So we like Mac Hollins here. I've been pleasantly surprised by him. I've been very surprised as well by Diggs. Like, I didn't think he'd be back from the injury as quickly as he was. I didn't think he'd be, you know, the teammate slash leader that he's been .. so far. I'm curious, and you just hinted at some of this, but I'm curious if Steph Diggs and the Steph Diggs experience has a shelf life.
I think it does. It did in Minnesota, and we were told that. It's so funny. You're asking me this, and I ask the exact same questions to people in Minnesota when this happened. And you're like, yeah, but everything's great here. And he's got, you know, this younger quarterback he's working with, and it's amazing. And this great relationship. And people in Minnesota said, just wait. Just wait. And I'm like, no. Well, guess what? Just wait. And I'll say the same thing to you guys. And that's, hey, I don't know. He's at a different point of his career, though, right? And, you know, we'll see how it ends. Stephon Diggs is the ultimate competitor. There's no doubt about that. I do not think he's a bad teammate in any sense. I think what happens, though, is Stephon has this aura and this weight about him that he is so competitive. He is so much of a guy that, you know, has a name and a spotlight that I think it becomes heavy around him. And if everything's not going exactly perfectly well, that becomes tough to sustain. I think that's what's happened in Minnesota and Buffalo.
What's the sense in Buffalo right now when you see the landscape of the AFC and some of Josh Allen's, you know, main rivals are all having bad years, or at least the teams are having bad years in the case of Mahomes and Burrow and Lamar Jackson? Is there any sense of, if you don't break through the AFC this year, then maybe you won't?
Yes, that's a lot of the talk here. It's a lot of the talk nationally, as you guys have probably heard as well, which is, it's a really interesting kind of dichotomy, which is, the Bills probably, from the outside looking in, have what might be considered their quote-unquote easiest path to the Super Bowl that they've had in this 5-year run. However, that is coupled with the worst team they've had in the 5-year run. So which would you rather have? Now, you want to have the best team possible. But, guys, I'll be honest with you. The fact that if the Bills, the nemesis has been Kansas City. And I know they lost to Cincinnati the 1 year as well. But if no Patrick Mahomes in Kansas City, no Joe Burrow in Cincinnati, no Lamar Jackson in Baltimore, at least it appears as though that's the case with all of these. Oh, my God, the Bills fans are signing me up. Even going on the road for 3 games, I think Bills fans say, let's take that. Like, even this game, for example. Yes, this is a very critical game. Bills don't want to lose it. Bills fans don't want to lose it. You don't want to see a hat and t-shirt game in New England with, you know, the Patriots and you know, winning the division. And we all know, though, that most likely the Patriots are going to win the division. And it's an important game. But I think if you told Bills fans right now you could sign up for the AFC divisional round in New England, they would absolutely take that, believe it or not, over Kansas City coming here or Baltimore coming here to Buffalo.
Interesting. He's Sal Capaccio, WGR550 up in Buffalo. Give him a follow at Sal Sports on Twitter. You know, looking at this game and this matchup, you mentioned McDermott earlier, his record in December. Like, our perception on McDermott is maybe he's on the hot seat. I don't know if it's the Jackson Dart glasses that he's sporting these days. I don't know what it is, but I don't have a ton of belief in him. I don't think a lot of Patriots fans have a ton of belief in him. How hot is his seat in Buffalo, if at all?
Well, from the fans' perspective, it's extremely hot. But I'll maintain that I don't think that this ownership has any thought to move on from Sean McDermott. Now, we'll see. Do they go to the AFC wild card and, you know, get blown out or something? I think all those things can always change things, right? I mean, Sean McDermott is one of the most – the only thing that's held him back from winning a Super Bowl or getting to a Super Bowl, I should say, has been pretty much the Kansas City Chiefs. Now, he's definitely had his defense and moments that he's coached that have done that. There's no doubt. I'm not excusing that. What I'm saying is, though, that I think Bills ownership knows that there are, you know, 25 other teams in this league that would love to have a coach like Sean McDermott who's done what he's done for the last 9 years in Buffalo. So I don't believe his seat's hot, but I will tell you guys, because of what happened in Kansas City in the divisional round in 21 with 13 seconds left, that forever sticks in Bills fans' minds, and no matter what Sean McDermott does, it does not matter to them. They just want a new coach, and they'll always point to why he's not the guy. He has to do it, or you're just going to go back to everything you just said about you can't get there, he won't be the guy to get you there. And it's just, we field calls about it every day on WGR that people just want a new head coach because that is the thing that sticks. I look at the big picture and say, oh my God, like, he's one of the better coaches in the league, and he has been, and do you not know where you were for 20 years before that?
Another thing you guys must get a lot of calls on is the wide receiver room, because even at the beginning of the year, it looked like a barren wasteland, and the Patriots have had some bad receiver rooms over the last 5 years, and even going into this year with sort of the uncertainty on Diggs and some of the younger players, we were all saying, like, we'd take the Pats group over the Bills group. It seems like they're just putting so much on Josh Allen to succeed, but yeah, the receiver room's got to be towards the bottom of the entire league.
You guys obviously remember and you heard the exchange between Brandon Bean and our morning show.
Yeah, we played it. Yeah, we played that.
Yeah, that was right after the draft. And, you know, our morning show host, Jeremy White, he's been on what he calls his wide receiver train for the last few years. It's actually kind of become a bit of a shtick and kind of cool. But, you know, just because ever since Stephon Diggs left, especially, it's been get Josh Allen, you know, another more receiving help, get him a true number one. But the Bills have gone to this mentality, and I think this is so ironic that the Bills actually shifted a mentality to everybody eats because they didn't want to have a guy like Stephon, and for the reasons I said, and there's so much weight around and you got to kind of make sure he's satisfied. And now it's like, wait a minute, he's doing that in New England and they kind of have an everybody eats. He's, you know, everybody's getting all these balls and the Bills need a guy like that now. So to answer your question though, yes, it is a huge question. It's something we've talked about. Now I will say, when you say put everything on Josh Allen, let's remember the Bills haven't done that because they have the number one rushing attack in the league. What the Bills have done here over the last few years, if they've gone to a different philosophy of, okay, we have Josh Allen. He's this great quarterback. Maybe he's the best quarterback in the league. He can do all these superhuman things, but he can make everybody around him throwing the ball better. What we need to do is insulate him with a really great running attack and a really good offensive line and keep him healthy and protected. And that's actually gone really well this year. And that's exactly what they've done this year. And the Bills lean on that running attack. I would make the argument that James Cook could be the AFC Offensive Player of the Year before Josh Allen could, even though Josh Allen would be the Bills' MVP.
Pick it. Who wins on Sunday?
Well, I'm on the radio broadcast on the sidelines, so I'm careful about things like this, guys, with all the gambling stuff that goes on these days, as you know. So I will say, though, that I am pretty sure that the Bills are in a position where they do not want to see the New England Patriots with hats and T-shirts after the game and celebrating a division championship. So I think the Bills will give everything they can to walk away with a victory here. But I do think the Patriots probably wind up winning the East because it's just – tough for them to see them losing against the Jets and the Dolphins, or the Dolphins, I should say. But I think that these two teams might match up again in the playoffs. So I think the Bills have a very good shot to win this game. But, man, if you can do what you did in Week 5, muck it up a little bit, get a couple of turnovers, I could see it going the Patriots' way.
Okay. He's Sal Capaccio, WGR 550 up in Buffalo. Give him a follow at Sal Sports on Twitter. Sal, we appreciate the time. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Sal.
Yeah, you got it, guys.
All right, Sal Capaccio joining us here on Jones and Keefe. He's got the Bills winning the battle on Sunday.
Yes, but not the division.
But the Patriots winning the war, if you will, in the division, maybe a rematch in the postseason.
Yeah, it is funny. I'm not surprised in Buffalo how they feel about Sean McDermott, right? Because it's just from the outside, right? We see him twice a year head-to-head.
Fans,
and then
he felt differently. About
no,
fans
he feels differently,
yes,
but yeah. Fans are like, all right, enough is enough. But it's also like, I guess that's probably the more mature way of looking at it is like, Kansas City Chiefs have literally stood in the way a couple of times. And the Chiefs were, maybe they still are, but they were a dynasty.
Right.
So it's like, are you going to fire your coach because the only team he can't beat is like the best team of the last 6 years?
Okay, but that's why this is so important.
100%. No, this year's a different story.
If there's no Chiefs in the playoffs and you get bounced by, you know, Drake May, or you get bounced by Trevor Lawrence or somebody like that, well, then what the hell are we talking about?
Yeah, but you can't just say, like, yeah, you're right. I've never liked Sean McDermott that much. But also, the GM's not doing a great job when you look at the roster around Josh Allen. Like, you're not maximizing Josh Allen. Because he hit on something we said, I think, earlier this week where this is the worst Bills team of the last 6 years, but it's also the worst AFC of the last 6 years, but they might not be able to capitalize on that because they also aren't that great.
It's fortunate that Steph Diggs has stepped up in such a big way for the Patriots this year because we were thinking about doing that wide receiver train bit, but now we don't have to do that.
I like that.
We don't have to do that.
We can't. Is good. They're in a worse spot.
You can check out Sal Capaccio again, WGR 550 up in Buffalo. If you missed any of it, good stuff there. It's on the Audacy app, AUDACY. Get it on your phone. Free, easy. Take it with you wherever you go. Good time of year to have the app on your phone. Keith, you suggested it's a great holiday gift. Is give that one out.
Be like, hey, listen, go
grab
to your, the
phone,
app
go
store.
Download it.
Yeah, boom. Just give you one.
Good holiday gift.
One gift.
Free for you, free for them.
Honestly, yeah.
And you won't miss any of Jones and Keefe. Just use the rewind feature to go check that out. Meanwhile, you could go way back to last week and listen to our plans for the Red Sox entering the winter meetings. Those have already been blown up. Those already cannot happen. Based on 1 week's time.
Cross that off the list.
So it's time to go back to the drawing board. We'll go on the clock again. Give you another Red Sox plan in just 60 seconds. I got a plan. Keith's got a plan. If you have them, you can weigh in as well on the phones. We'll do it next.